Hi, this is Jeff Siegel, the wine curmudgeon, and today we're talking to Russ Kane of Vintage Texas, quite possibly the premier Texas wine blog in the country, and we're doing it as part of a regional wine week for drinklocalwine.com. Russ, thank you very much for doing this.
You're very welcome, Jeff. I'm glad to be here wherever I am.
Well, that's the great thing about writing about regional wine is sometimes we lose track of where we are. Russ, we want to talk about Texas wine. I know I'm going to be writing a lot about Texas wine on the blog this week. You're going to be writing a lot about Texas wine on your blog this week, which you do, of course, anyway. But can you maybe talk a little bit about what you see over the last couple of years, last several years, the two or three biggest trends in Texas wine that you've seen?
Well, I think the thing that really is impressive going into October as Texas Wine Month is just the sheer number of Texas wine events that are going on across the state of Texas. It's almost overwhelming. And I was talking to one of the winemakers just a few weeks ago, and I told him, I said, we better watch out. This Texas wine thing may go mainstream. Because literally, I think it is becoming more acceptable to drink local wine, particularly Texas wine. And it's not as far-fetched of a thing as we used to see it to be maybe 10 or 15 years back.
What do you think the difference is that it's not as unusual? Because I know, and I've been doing this for a long time myself, Texas wine, I mean, there are more and more people know about Texas wine, more and more people accept it as quality wine. What do you think are the biggest reasons for that?
Well, I think in general, the quality has increased. It has gotten better. There are more wines that they have access to. Perhaps more of them have gone and visited some Texas wineries and have found it to be a quite pleasant experience. So I think in general, you know, what I've seen the change over, say, 10 years is when I would ask somebody if they actually tried Texas wine, they said, yeah, they did. And boy, was it bad. Nowadays, when I ask them that, they can actually respond back and they either have a favorite winery they visited or a wine that they buy on a regular basis. So I think there's been a paradigm shift here over the past 10 years. You ask me why. Again, I think it's been a slow process of acceptance, people trying more wines, enjoying them, finding that they're actually quite competitive in terms of quality and nowadays even price point with some wines that they have bought from other major wine regions.
The biggest improvement, and I agree with you about the improvement in quality, it's been stunning, not just over the last 20 years, but over the last 10 years, and especially this decade. What do you think is the biggest reason for the improvement in quality?
Well, I think part of it is the support that the industry has gotten from the Department of Agriculture in Texas, the TDA, and their programs to provide support in terms of field extension service support in growing grapes, state viticulturalists, state enologists, that's hard to say, support as well. I think more and more people are taking advantage of that. One of the things I see is there's still a lot of people who aren't taking advantage of that in terms of winemakers and grape growers. It can only get better going forward.
Then you bring up an interesting point, and I talk about this with people a lot, what we call tasting room palate, in which a lot of winemakers and regional winemakers are guilty of this, but they're not the only ones who are. But winemakers who taste their wine and they don't quite see that there are improvements to be made. How do we get regional winemakers to take that next step to understand that, yes, my wine can always be better?
Well, I think a lot of it comes through peer pressure. I think I've seen at least one case recently where I would definitely say a winemaker in a very visible winery, a lot of traffic, has had some issues. He's very in tune with what it takes to operate an entertainment venue, perhaps less concerned about the inner workings of his wines. And I think it was through the pressure of some of the other winemakers from wineries in the area that finally got him on the program. And so I think that's part of it. There's more and more peer pressure, but from myself, I try not to pull any punches when I'm one-on-one with people, because I've actually had to grit my teeth a couple times on some of the winery trips that I've made to some new places that, you know, for example, that, you know, they were pouring a nice rosé wine, and I said, oh, that's an interesting rosé. Oh, it's not a rosé, it's Pinot Grigio. And so, you know, that's supposed to be a nice white light wine. And but in general, like I said, I think there's been peer pressure from other wineries to I think there's been the support and educational activities through the Texas Wine and Grape Growers Association and the Texas Department of Agriculture. Those have been really good programs, and I think more and more people are getting with the program, kind of like what happened in Washington State maybe 15, 20 years ago.
That's a very good point. One of the things that I've always noticed and have mentioned, like you, I spent a lot of my time trying to explain to people nicely that things aren't perfect and they could maybe be just a little better. Washington State has done a great job of everybody in the state working together to promote its wines, of the largest winery in the state, Chateau Saint Michel, understanding that it is not there by itself, that it can help the rest of Washington State, and that that will help Chateau Saint Michel. And we're just finally, I hope, getting to that point in Texas where we have that same sort of cooperation among the wineries. And I know I was talking to Paul Bonarigo at Messinahoff a couple of weeks ago at Grape Fest, and we were chatting very briefly about it, and he said something that not a whole lot of Texas winemakers have told me, which is, it doesn't matter how good I am, the entire industry is only as good as the worst winemaker.
Oh, that is really true, because I think, like this point in case, or case in point, that this winemaker had a very visible winery on a main drag somewhere, and I think the other wineries in the area kind of got him with the program, because it was a very visible place. And at times, not so smiling faces of tasting room visitors.
All right, let's get to the juicy, interesting stuff here. Okay. If you were appointed czar of the Texas wine industry, Russ, what would be the couple of things that you would do to improve the quality of Texas wine? And then second part of that question is, what would you do to get consumers to try more Texas wine?
What would I do to the industry? First of all, before I get to the consumers, let me do one thing. Let me annex a state that has about 10,000 acres of vines. We are at such a deficit, and it's created all sorts of problems with making Texas wine without estate grapes, which has been a kind of a distraction from everything. So I think, you know, number one by far is we need more Texas grapes. You know, we're kind of making progress, maybe a few hundred acres at a time here. So, you know, you think that maybe in 5 or 10 years we're going to be at a more equilibrium position so we can make Texas wine with Texas grapes. It sounds funny saying that. But with regard to consumers, I think one of the things that we've got to do is more and more, and I'm seeing, you know, movement in that area, is getting people to try Texas wines for the first time and having access to them. Particularly in restaurants and other venues. You know, I love the movement that's going on right now with the farm-to-table menus and things like that. I think Texas basically has a wonderful agricultural product in wine, and if it can be consumed and viewed in the context of its other agricultural produce and beef and seafood, you know, to me, that's the natural context. Wines and foods that grow up together is the way consumers normally view. If I'm going to an Italian restaurant, I normally try to drink Italian wine. And I think, again, if we look at Texas farm products and produce and seafood and beef, Texas wine should go right along with it.
Well, that brings up the whole restaurant issue, which we probably don't have time to discuss here. Although, right. Probably say a few choice things, it would get us in some trouble. But let's talk about the wine itself. A couple of recommendations, maybe some wines that more people don't know about? What have you tasted lately that you've enjoyed?
Probably the winery that I love to turn people on to is Brennan Vineyards. They're up in Comanche, Texas. They're getting pretty good distribution now, at least in the Houston area. I've seen them in several liquor stores and wine stores. Pat Brennan up there is doing a wonderful job making quality wines. The other, I would say, is McPherson Cellars. Kim McPherson's been around for a long time. The McPherson name kind of was involved in the start of the Texas wine industry. And he's a true believer of bringing quality wines and bringing the price point at a reasonable place where consumers will actually jump at the chance of buying Texas wines. So those are the two that I like to kind of turn people on to. The ones that people know are typically the Becker Vineyards and Llano Estacado. And in certain wines, Messinahoff as well.
Okay. All right, and so I'm sure you've got all sorts of fun things planned on your blog for Regional Wine Week this week.
Yes, actually, I'm working up something right now that's kind of on the edge a little bit. I'm looking at Black Spanish wines, which is a French American hybrid, as you know. And the interesting movement I see right now is it's been the grape of choice for making, you know, sweet red and port style wines, even Madeira down at HAC. But there's more and more people either using it as a basis for a red table wine by itself, or even blending it in with Syrah, Merlot, and it makes a really nice table wine if done properly. So that's kind of a cutting edge thing, because it's definitely a work in progress, much the way the white hybrid grape Blanc du Bois was maybe 5 years back.
Well, yeah, you know me, Russ. If I had my way, if I was the czar of the Texas wine industry, I'd be telling those winemakers to make a whole lot more wine with stuff like Black Spanish and Blanc du Bois, because nobody else is doing it. And if you do a great Black Spanish or you do a great Blanc du Bois, that's going to give you something unique that nobody else has. Well, listen, Russ, this has been great. Thank you very, very much. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And I'll say goodbye from deep in the heart of old Virginia.
That's right. Russ is doing Regional Wine Week research. Well, thank you for listening. This is Jeff Siegel, the wine curmudgeon. May your glass always be full, and may you always enjoy who you're drinking wine with. So long, everybody.
Take care.